He was the ugly in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Tuco, the Mexican outlaw with the distinctive proboscis.
You never had a rope around your neck. Well, I'm going to tell you something. When that rope starts to pull tight, you can feel the devil bite your ass.
The accent was fake. The nose was real, and one of Eli Wallach's trademarks. He was 50 years old when he starred in this, a spaghetti western as they were then called, a veteran actor of stage and screen. Eli Wallach is now 88 and has just performed new dialogue for a restored version of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, as has his co-star, a guy named Eastwood. The third star of the film, Lee Van Cleef, died 15 years ago. His new lines were provided by a voice-alike. Eli Wallach joins us from our studios in New York City. Mr. Wallach, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, Mr. Wallach, nearly 20 minutes have been restored to this film. Can you recall why they were cut in the first place?
Yes, the distributors in America were furious because it lasted 3 hours, and they felt, well, we can only show it twice a day. So they cut 15 minutes out of it, or 16.
Now, I've heard stories over the years about this company of actors, the spaghetti western shot in Italy, directed by Sergio Leone, of the actors performing in 3 or 4 separate languages and not, in a sense, ever the same language with each other.
You played the language you knew. Mm-hmm. I spoke my lines in English. I played a scene with my brother, a priest. He didn't understand a word I was saying. And he spoke Italian. I did it with Germans, with Spaniards, all of them. It didn't matter, because it was all dubbed later in a studio in New York. So we put in our lines, lip-syncing, very difficult skill.
Oh, so another actor, for example, when the film was released actually in Italy, another actor would dub your lines in Italian.
Oh, I've heard my voice in Italy, and the man should be an opera singer. It's a deep baritone, very rich, and very emotional. I said to him, it doesn't match. Leone said, in Italy it matches.
Is it true? I've heard that Sergio Leone had an imperfect command of English when he directed.
Well, we communicated originally in French. Mm-hmm. I asked him, what is a spaghetti western? To me, it was like Hawaiian pizza. 3 days after I'm in Rome, I'm put over a horse. Clint Eastwood is dragging me up to a sheriff and turning me in for the reward money. And the next thing I know, I was being hanged. I was hanged 4 times in that movie.
You just couldn't get it right, huh?
Well, I think the horses were terrified as well as I was. Because in the rope, they had a small charge of dynamite. In the scene, Clint Eastwood aims at the rope to shoot it. He shoots. The special effects man rubs 2 wires together, and the rope is broken, and the horse takes off. So I said to Leone, are you going to put cotton in the horse's ears? He said, I never heard of that. I said, well, in Hollywood, and this I made up. I said, in Hollywood, they always put cotton in the horse's ears. He said, no, no, we don't bother with that. Sure enough, Clint shoots, the rope breaks, and the horse, who wasn't in on the rehearsal, takes off like a bat out of hell. And I'm trying to stop him. My hands are tied behind me. And we rode a mile before that horse. I pleaded with him. I said, I'm from New York. Please.
Not like the Central Park carriages, is it?
No, it's quite different.
Yeah. Was it, or how tough was it to get back into the character of Tuco so many years afterwards?
I don't know that I ever did get back into the character. But when you see it on the screen, there's one scene where I come into a cave on my horse, and I'm trying to enlist 3 men to help me track down Clint Eastwood. And there's a big pot of boiling water with some potatoes and meat in it. And I reached down in and pulled it out and bit into it. When I saw it 30 years later, 35, I remembered it very well because I got diarrhea from eating the damn meat or whatever was in that pot.
Potatoes. You've got to be poor to eat potatoes. Really poor. I'm rich, but I'm lonely. The world is divided into 2 parts. Those who have friends and those who are lonely like Poduco. You see, I used to have a friend, Pedro. Chico and Ramon, his two brothers, were my friends too. But who knows where they are now? That's too bad, friends. Tough luck I haven't found you. I had a good deal for you. There's a big son of a bitch who's got $4,000. $4,000. And I know where to find it.
Tuco was a maneuverer, a sly. After all, that's the way he made his living. He was a bandit.
Yeah.
I often thought, why do bandits always... You never see what they do with the money. They hold up trains and rob banks and steal the cattle. I always used to dress up, try to dress up, to show where the money went.
Well, would it be fair to say that it's not dialogue that propels these pictures forward?
Well, the movies are a visual art. I spend a lot of my time, most of my time, in the theater. Mm-hmm. You have to think on the screen. I used to sneer at movie making. I thought it was easy. Then when I began making movies, I realized how difficult it is. It's like pointillism. You know, Surratt put little dots on the screen, and you don't see the picture until you step away from it. Mm-hmm. When I see, like, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly now, it plays everywhere in the United States, all over the world. And I see it sometimes and think, why did I do it that way? Why couldn't I do it with a different color? Well, in the theater, you do 8 times a week. You can perfect your aim. Mm-hmm. You can sharpen it. In the movies, once it's on screen, it's gone.
Mm. Mr. Wallach, you were, even then, such a distinguished stage actor. A lot of your stage career identified with the Actors Studio in Tennessee Williams. What was the Actors Studio like when you joined it right after the war?
The Actors Studio was founded in 1947, and the idea was to have a place, a sort of gym, where you could work out. If you were in a regular play on Broadway and playing it 8 times a week, you could come to the Actors Studio and do a scene from Hamlet or do a scene from Chekhov, and that was a release for the actor to keep sharpening his talent. In the beginning, there was Marlon Brando, Carl Malden, John Forsyth, Maureen Stapleton, Kim Stanley, my wife, Ann Jackson. Mm-hmm. We used to go there every Tuesday and every Friday for 2.5 hours and work out. And when people say the method, I don't agree with it. Every actor has his method. Every actor steals from other actors. It's a good idea.
You and Ann Jackson, your wife, have been together, working together, and married, what, since 1948?
Yeah, 57 years.
God bless.
You know what she says when they say, how did the marriage work out? How did you make a marriage work out? And she says, because I'm a saint. Now, what I enjoy with her is that you never know what's coming next. I'll tell you, the most mail I get for anything I've ever done, ever, in my whole career, was one episode of Batman. I played Mr. Freeze, who was going to freeze the whole world. I got $350. 2 years ago, Arnold Schwarzenegger played Mr. Freeze, the movie. He got $20 million. I said to my wife, I don't understand it. I've spent my life in the theater. I'll never see $20 million if I live for another 50 years. She said, lift weights. So that's what keeps us going.
What are some of the plays you and your wife appeared in together over the years?
I'm writing my memoirs, so I'm right up to date.
Yeah.
We did Love, L-U-V. Mike Nichols directed it with Alan Arkin. We played for a year on Broadway. We did Rhinoceros with Zero Mostel, a play by Ian Esco. We did The Typist and the Tiger. I think we innocently picked plays that had tremendous fights in them, because that saved marriage counselors and psychiatrists and so on. We were doing a play once called Waltz of the Toreadors. At the end of the second act, I'm choking her. I say, and I can't stand her. And an usher came backstage and he said, going up the aisle, a wife said to the husband, do you think he killed her? And the husband said, I hope so. No. When we're on the stage, we're professionals.
Yeah.
Except she breaks up. She laughs sometimes on the stage. I once was going to report her to the union, to Equity, for conduct unbecoming an actress.
As someone who has been among the foremost interpreters of Tennessee Williams, what makes his plays extraordinary? What makes his dialogue such a pleasure for an actor?
Well, they once interviewed, I did the Rose Tattoo of Tennessee Williams. And they once asked Maureen Stapleton, who was in it with me, how come you do so many of Tennessee Williams's plays? They deal with homosexuality, incest, cannibalism. And she said, well, to quote Tennessee, they're just folks. So I think Tennessee found the need in people. He has a speech by Lord Byron in the play Camino Real, in which Lord Byron says, and I'm going to quote him, okay?
Please.
He's about to go to Greece, and he says, lately, I've been listening to hired musicians behind a row of artificial palm trees instead of the single pure-stringed instrument of my heart. For what is the heart but an instrument that turns chaos into order, noise into music? Make voyages, attempt them. There's nothing else. And my wife and I have used that as our motto from then on. We make voyages, we attempt them. There's nothing else.
Mr. Wallach, it's been delightful talking to you.
Thank you, Scott.
Take care, sir.
If you call me Eli, I'll call you Scott.
All right. Thank you, Eli.
Thank you.
Eli Wallach, the newly restored version of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, is just out on DVD with newly recorded dialogue by Eli Wallach and his co-star, Clint Eastwood.
Someone once said to me, well, when are you going to retire? I said, that's a word that never comes out of me, because I don't want to retire. I want to keep going till I hope there's a theater somewhere else where I can go after I die.
And you can hear more of our interview with Eli Wallach, including his recollections of Clint Eastwood, Marlon Brando, Clark Gable, and Marilyn Monroe at our website, npr.org. And this is Weekend Edition, directed by Alice Winkler and produced by Sarah Byer-Kelly, The Good and the Beautiful, and vice versa. Our staff includes Darcy Bacon, Bridget McCarthy, Julie Holmes-Bailey, Ed McNulty, Andy Lyman, and Lauren Spohr. Our technical director is Burke Hunt, so ably assisted by Greg Gavin, Kurt Turner, Stu Rushfield, Mitch Eaton, and Arjun Hutchins. Our librarians, Kim Oleski, Mary Glendenning, and Dan Onstead. Our senior editor is Gwendolyn Tompkins. The senior producer of Weekend Edition is Peter Breslow. And hi to our newest crewmate, James Tufts. I'm Scott Simon.